I'm Alan Walker. Welcome to the People Podcast. If you want to build credibility with business leaders, you could do worse than drive an evidence-based approach to HR. Want to know what that means? So did we. So we asked the inspiring Robert St. Jacks, who really gets it. Enjoy!
Please take your seats. This evening's performance is about to begin.
So welcome to the latest edition of the Chat Talent People podcast. Our aim was to get 30 podcasts delivered in the month of April whilst we were all in lockdown, give something for people to listen to and to continue their learning, really. And we did that. And now we're actually at a point where we're stepping back and we're going to do some real quality and still very interesting topics and discuss those. We're very lucky today to have on the phone with us, all the way from Vancouver, Robert St. Jacks, who is, Robert, I'm going to get you to introduce yourself properly, and talk about what your role is at Seven Geese. Do you want to, first and foremost, welcome. Do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Thank you. In terms of my background, you know, I kind of jokingly refer to myself as the Forrest Gump of HR. So a lot of things that have happened to me, you know, within my career have been, you know, serendipity or just dumb luck, you know, however you want to look at it. So, you know, it's interesting going back. I was at a crossroads after university and finishing my undergrad and wanted to get a master's degree in industrial relations at the time. And my mentor convinced me, he said, forget about a job. I want you to think about a problem that you want to solve and create a mission. So the mission that I created, you know, way back in 92 was to make HR better for employees, for managers, for organizations and the communities as a whole. Because remember, coming out of the 91, 92 recession, HR didn't fare so well. So that was my mission. That was my stake in the ground. Yep. So I became a labor and employment attorney. So I did that for 5 years. And then one of my clients hired me in. And that was the beginning of my HR career in terms of being in-house. Mm-hmm. The first three jobs I have were turnaround efforts. And I'll give you one example. One of them was Delta Airlines after 9/11.
Okay.
Wow. So I learned change management the hard way and just thought, wow. You know, that was amazing. I love transforming companies. So as if that wasn't difficult enough, I moved over to Dubai and I started trying to do transformation at organizations that had grown 100%+ each of the previous 2 or 3 years. So, you know, how do you change, right? You know, Cotter used to say, oh, you need a sense of urgency, you know, or an emergency to help drive change. Actually, you don't. And so I learned to do it in hyper-growth, fast-growing organizations in Dubai. Ended up working on some fantastic projects like the Palm. I ended up working on projects like the Burj Khalifa. And people, you know, asked me, what was that like? And I said, imagine solving this problem. I've got 5,000 tradespeople that are going to work. First of all, I got to get them on the right buses at the right times and then moved up across 164 floors. That's pretty straightforward, believe it or not. What's hard is how do I feed those people? I had 14 different nationalities, 12 different kinds of food that I had to deliver to these 5,000 people across 164. Fantastic, right? Experience, you know, figuring those kind of things out.
And very hands-on, very much just about getting it done, isn't it? That sort of thing.
Yeah, and just working with brilliant people. And, you know, so this is where, you know, I saw the importance of maths in my life. And so I continued working with startups and ended up in Southeast Asia, where I worked for a company called iFlix, which, not surprisingly, you can imagine is the Asian or developing world version of Netflix. And, you know, we were based out of KL, but we had offices in 24 different locations and almost 1,000 people scattered, you know, across from the Philippines all the way to Morocco. And that's where I became a customer of Seven Geese. And when I moved back to Canada, I later joined Seven Geese as its first head of customer success.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about what Seven Geese do, because that's obviously it's an unusual circumstance having a practitioner and a senior leadership practitioner as well, then move across into the technology space. So two questions there. What does Seven Geese do and what do you think you bring to the mix?
Absolutely. So in terms of Seven Geese, we are basically an end-to-end continuous performance management software platform. So what does that mean? So typically we use the OKR platform as a starting point in terms of goal setting. Then we reinforce that through check-ins, one-on-ones, recognition. We also have feedback features coming in through. We're able to do reviews, but not the reviews that are typically done. We do reviews in a way that are basically pulls the real-time data, summarizes it nicely for you, and literally HR people with a click of a button could send out, you know, 500, 1,000 reviews where they're all preloaded with information. The last piece that we have is career planning and development. So, you know, not all development is formal training, right? Some of it is on the job. And so we tie that together with the OKRs, right? So then you'll have business OKRs and developmental OKRs. So that's what we do. In terms of how I got involved, I'll just be really direct. And the way I came at this was, look, I was in a situation where the organization I was with, iFlex, we were trying to raise funds. And I'm there in front of these investors who have heard every BS story on the planet, right? They've heard it all. So I was up there showing my PowerPoint and I had seven geese. And, you know, they said, stop right now. I want you to pull up this goose system and show it to me real time. I said, sure. So I brought it up. And of course, you know, at that time we had about 700 employees and we had in the system 3,000 objectives created. We had about 30,000 check-ins mid-quarter. So they were shocked, right? And so they said, everybody in the organization, yes, you see everybody in the organization, what they're doing. And they updated on a weekly basis. Their jaws just dropped. Second thing, they said, okay, well, you're growing, you're in the process of growing from 4 to 24 offices. How do you not dilute your culture? And then I clicked over to the recognition tab. And at that point, mid-quarter, we had almost 900 instances of recognition, which, you know, follow the STAR methodology, very in-depth, very clear, and they're values-based. So long story short, we ended up closing the deal. It was $125 million in funding. It is very rare that HR, quote unquote, gets to close the deal, right? Especially in funding like that. And I thought, why did I join Seven Geese? Because you know what? I want every HR person to feel the way I did. I mean, I felt for that one instance, and I know it doesn't happen often in HR, but I felt like a superstar, you know?
And it's a bit like Victor Kiam, wasn't it? Who I think his famous quote was, I liked it so much, I bought the company, which was the razor that he'd used. That sort of light bulb moment, that this was just something brilliant.
That's correct. And so I thought, hey, I can help other people do this. Now, I found out later, you know, through the interview process that when I had implemented it, I had one of the highest adoption rates post-implementation of any of their clients as well. So they said, hey, can you help us, you know, internally and you know, help ensure that more of our clients were like you, you know, and have high levels of adoption.
Okay, cool. So what you talked about there was a little bit around evidence. You started to touch on evidence-based HR. Just want to explain a little bit more about what that is.
Yeah, definitely. So in terms of, you know, when you talk about evidence HR, evidence-based HR, it follows along of, you know, the concept of evidence-based management, generally speaking. And what that says is that, you know, you should be looking in terms of evidence in and of itself, you should be looking to four sources, right? So the first, you know, source is what do the stakeholders need or want? And I would focus more on the word need in this case, because sometimes, you know, what people want won't solve their problems. And so it's just focusing on what the stakeholders need. So understanding that. Second piece of evidence is what does the internal data say, right? What does the information you have, what does that say? The third piece is what does external research say? And the fourth one is what is your professional expertise? And what you need to be doing is looking at the four of these sources of evidence together to come up with a solution to the question you have. Mm-hmm. And that's the piece where a lot of folks fall down, right? Because typical what happens, right? CEO comes in, calls in the HR person, say, okay, all right, I want an employee engagement survey. And usually the HR person, and I was in this boat, is so happy to be asked to do something, you know, it's supported by the leadership team. They just jump right on it. So it's hard to then step back and say, okay, understand, great. Glad you're in favor of improving employee engagement. Why?
Yep.
What is the outcome you hope out to get out of it? well, I want employees to be engaged. Isn't that a good thing? Okay, so everybody's engaged. What does that mean to you, right? What does it mean to the organization, and so on and so forth? So you keep asking the, you know, the proverbial five whys, and you get into, oh, I want to increase performance. Ah, okay. Well, if you want to increase performance, here are some better evidence-based ways to get there, right? And so it's that questioning first that has to happen in order to get to which evidence or how will you use the combination of your evidence sources to make a better decision.
Yeah. So how widespread would you say this process is within, say, the global HR community?
I would say peaks and troughs, right? Yeah. So you have Laszlo Bock wrote a book about it, and that would be on the one end, you know, highly, highly evidence-based, right? And what he does over and over again in his book, in terms of what Google did, is framing the question the right way, almost like an experiment, right? Like a hypothesis or scientific experiment, gathering all the evidence, right? I mean, sometimes even myself, I find myself like going, geez, you know, 4 years of research on teams and millions of dollars, right? And I was like, guys, there's already tons of research out there. But that was their internal data piece, right? Because they saw the external research, what that meant in terms of teams and trust and, you know, what makes a good manager and so on and so forth. So they used that to formulate their hypothesis and then validated that internally. So that's a great example of they used external research to frame their internal data gathering, mash the two together and say, okay, this is how, you know, this is what a good manager looks like, right? And, you know, everybody saw the results of that, which was surprising to a certain extent to some people, where they found that technical prowess wasn't number one.
Yep. Do you, what do you think we can do as HR professionals to make this more widespread? Because it seems we don't follow business models enough, that we kind of go off and do our own thing, as you've alluded to, or just feel so excited about being invited to talk to the top table. But what can we do as HR professionals to get more working this way, I guess?
Yeah, there's a few things. I mean, one of the easiest ways is to start looking at some of the resources that are available to you. Now, not everybody, there's a couple obstacles that I want to point out that are very real and in my opinion, quite annoying. So the first one is access to this external research, right? So there is a tremendous amount of research that has been done, and it's just, you know, they're stuck behind paywalls. And, you know, with researchers, so you've got our tax dollars, especially in Europe and here in Canada, right, paying for all this research. And then we've got to pay to get at it again, which is really odd. So, you know, you've got that constraint there. But in terms of, there's some resources there. So first of all, you have the Center for Evidence-Based Management, right? So cebma.org. It's a great place to look. They've published a lot of things, but there's a few great websites and that work with the Center for Evidence-Based Management. One of them is called Science for Work, and which is especially relevant for HR people. And what they do is they're fantastic. And you know, these people are doing the work of angels, so to speak, in that what they'll do is they'll take a meta-analysis, right? So a study of hundreds or thousands of studies, they'll summarize it, grade it in terms of, you know, applicability to practice, and then give you practice tips all within three, four paragraphs. Fantastic. Yep. So starting with websites like that and with tools like that, and start to say, okay, how can I bring this into my practice, right? And then start with a few quick wins, so to speak. And, you know, like I said, the proverbial Pandora's box was opened when Laszlo Bock wrote his book. And it's just a matter of treating everything like an experiment and having almost like a scientific mind and saying, okay, how do I test this? And I know a lot of practitioners already do this, but it's doing it in a much more, how should I say, structured manner, right? You mentioned, you know, decision models in terms of we will do a pilot, right? So trying it with a certain team or group. I did the same thing, right? So when I was looking at Seven Geese, I specifically piloted it with the group that was the lowest paid and the least educated in the company. And the most dispersed. So my theory is if I can get it to work there, it'll work everywhere. Yep. Right. Yep. So you set up these experiments with, you know, kind of the outcome in mind. I'd like to roll this out to the company. Let me put this system, this process, this construct through its paces, so to speak, so yep. that when I'm pitching this and I'm asking for the big budget to roll this out globally, I will have knocked down all their objections up front.
Yeah. And what if we've implemented evidence-based HR, and let's use a particular example. Let's look at the world that I typically live in, which is the pre-employment, if you like, piece, the talent acquisition piece.
Yeah.
If we were to implement evidence-based talent acquisition successfully, what would that success look like? How could we measure it? How would we know we'd actually achieve what we set out to do?
Yeah. So, I mean, in terms of recruitment, that's a great example because recently in 2016, there's researchers named Hunter and Schmidt, and mm-hmm. they were somewhat famous in 1998 because what they did was a 85-year summary of research related to selection processes, right? And they updated it recently in 2016 and have done a 100-year review of the thousands of studies related to selection. And what they found was in terms of the standalone validity, right? So in terms of validity, this is if you do this activity, you have a higher chance of choosing someone who will then provide you with great job performance. So it's all tied into job performance. And okay. It's interesting. So one piece that's interesting is that the number one predictive activity is a general mental ability test. So let me ask you this, right? How many organizations today do those? It is the number one predictor of job performance. How many organizations do those today? Very few. I'd say probably in the single digits. Yep. I haven't heard of many. You know, the second piece, and this was highlighted in great detail in Laszlo Bock's book, you know, structured employment interviews, peer ratings, mm-hmm. right? Let's look at what's used most often today. Personality-based tests, right? That is 13th out of 14 that they studied. So you have... Yeah. You have organizations ignoring, you know, the top criteria, you know, that have been shown to impact job performance. And they're jumping down and literally globally are spending billions of dollars of psychometric assessments, which have, you know, very little validity in yep. these areas. So what this means is if you look at the statistics, right, I mean, I'm sure you could quote hundreds of them, but it's grim, right? In terms of yep. senior professional and senior management roles, right? I've seen some studies say as high as 60% either leave or are asked to go within 18 to 24 months, right? Again, depending which yep. study you look at. That is an astronomical failure rate. At the same time, you have here, you know, in front of you, free, basically a list of those tests, those structures, those selection methodologies that positively impact job performance, right? And so you're looking at, you know, these, and they're pretty much being ignored.
Yep.
And so it's just, you know, by focusing on some of the research, and then remember, let's look at the way Google did it, right? So Google says, yeah, structured employment interviews, got it. Okay, we're there.
Yep.
But then what they did was tested it internally, right? So they started with the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, and they had what? They started with 100 questions and then narrowed it down to, you know, a smaller amount that, you know, they saw through their internal data, you know, basically mm-hmm. led to high performers and folks that stuck around. Right. So it's that two-step process. They started with the external. What does the research tell us? And then coming in. If you look at some of those organizations, right, I think Procter & Gamble, for example, was once referred to as being able to stack talent like cordwood, right? If you yep. look at some of the CEOs of all these large companies, they started as brand managers for Procter & Gamble and didn't make the cut. So you have Steve Ballmer, Meg Whitman, Jeffrey Immelt, former president of InBev, and so on. You've got all these individuals who went on to become CEOs of Fortune 50, Fortune 100 companies who actually, made it into the Procter & Gamble system. So they're very good. And the first thing Procter & Gamble does is a general mental ability test, right? They call it the P&G MAT instead of the GMAT. In that area, they also have structured interviews and so on and so forth, right? So you can see they've followed the science and, they have a reputation for, quote unquote, stacking talent like Cordwood.
Yeah. Okay. So if I was an HR TA specialist, whatever, and I wanted to find out a lot more about this and sort of get some really good reading, you've mentioned obviously Laszlo Bock's book. Is there anything, say, that, I don't know, of Seven Geese brought out anything that white papers or things that could help me to understand it in more detail? Because it strikes me as it could come across as quite a complex topic.
Yeah. And so in terms of, as it relates to Seven Geese, right, we refer to the research that we've done as the science being baked in, right? Because exactly to your point, it is like, how do I research all this? How do I look at all this? And so in terms of the processes that we suggest in terms of what the system supports, when we say science, we don't mean the study that appeared in The Guardian last week, right? We talk about systematic reviews, right? So this is a review of thousands of studies. We talk about meta-analyses, right? This is a review of hundreds of studies. And how many times has that meta-analysis been cited? So for example, Hunter and Schmidt on talent, I think that peer-reviewed paper has been cited close to 5,000 or 6,000 times, right? So again, people rely on that. So same thing, right? So as we come down to, look at performance management, continuous performance management, we break it down into some of the scientific pieces, right? So the first one that has been researched a lot is goal science or goal setting. And that's been done by Locke and Latham. And, those two individuals have basically said, look, if you want to, write a goal and write it in such a way that, there's a high achievement rate, here's the structure you need to follow. So not only do we teach that, right? Not only do we have material, so we've got webinars, we've got some white papers as well on our corporate website. Mm-hmm. But when we do, for myself, I deliver professional services to clients. And so this is where we highlight some of the pieces of the science, right? And writing a great goal in a way that has high achievement is not enough, right? There needs to be another couple follow-on pieces. So one of them we talked about is transparency. And we start to see, and I tie it back to the fitness industry, right? So you've got your Fitbits and your Stravas and things like that, right? So when people make public commitments about, I'm going to do a triathlon this year, I'm going to do a marathon. And what do you see in your Facebook and Instagram and Twitter feeds, right? Is all your friends, as they're moving along towards their objective, right? They've publicly made this commitment. It's transparent. And, they do their updates. So again, the same science that the fitness industry used has existed in the workplace, right? Or in terms of workplace studies. So again, that transparency really works. Progress. Again, the fitness industry has taken full advantage of it. How many people do we see at 4:30, right, in the afternoon, pacing back and forth, trying to get their 10,000 steps in? Why? Because their watch has buzzed them and said, hey, you got 9,000 steps, it's 4 o'clock. Are you going to be ready to reach your goals? Why don't you stand up, take a walk, type of thing. And so what we do is when we say we bake in the science, within our system, we have these, what we call technical nudges, like a smartwatch or like a Fitbit or a fitness wearable, whereby it's like, hey, you're 30% of the way there, you're 40% of the way there, you're 70% of the way there, and only 50% of the way through the quarter. Great. Why don't you do another update, right? So it's basically baking in all the science into the system itself and then using intelligent nudges, right? Machine learning, a little bit of AI to move people forward.
Cool. So actually, in essence, the best way to research is to come have a demo of Seven Geese.
Yes, actually, in terms of continuous performance management, I would say we bake the science in and we highlight it. And, you know, what we've done, too, is we've asked permission from a lot of these researchers. We have their papers. They're not behind paywalls. And we have permission to share them as well. So we're able to do that for folks as part of their due diligence, because we think, you know, we walk the talk. You should do your due diligence, including on us.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Robert, that's been really interesting. There's lots of areas there that I think each of them on their own, we could go into a lot more detail around. But as I say, I think the key is that if someone's looking to get more information about this, reach out to yourself for a conversation or an intro to Seven Geese, whichever it is. What's the best way to do that?
Okay. So the best way to reach me individually is Robert@sevengeese.com with the number seven, you know, being in the name. You could also go to my LinkedIn profile, Robert Saint-Jacques with a hyphen, and go ahead and link into me, ask me any questions. I tend to, you know, spend most of my mornings answering folks on LinkedIn. I also help out folks career-wise as well, but happy to help out in those areas. So those are two places you can find.
That's supposed to be getting touched. Well, we'll make sure that when we post, when we broadcast the podcast, that those details are on the post. Brilliant. Thank you very, very much for the intro to evidence-based HR. It's a shame. It almost does seem like it is an intro, which is wrong after I've done 25 years in the industry, but look forward to seeing how this develops and for hearing more about Seven Geese. So, thank you for your time today, Robert.
Oh, you're quite welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. Head over to chattalent.com for more blogs, vlogs, webinars, and other great content about HR, talent, and recruiting. Everything you could possibly need. Enjoy!